We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
This is a journey. Journey into sound.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing. I didn't know nothing about him.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently sour with her.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Hey, Mike.
I have both of you now.
Okay. I'm on.
I think Dave, you're muted.
Yeah, I don't hear Dave.
What is happening here? My goodness. Hey, everybody, here on the Collision. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice. 89.3 FM, WPFW, The Collision, where sports and politics collide. Trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. Trying to make sure that we are able to support WPFW as we finish this year that was 2024. Thrilled to have on us with us this week, Chuck Modiano, two-thirds of the brain trust that is The Collision here on WPFW. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Dave?
And I'm doing fantastic. You know, today is, of course, as we said, the Pledge Week. And just a reminder to folks that we are trying to raise $75,000 in the last week of December to help us support everything that we're doing here at WPFW, bringing you the kind of listening and broadcasting greatness that only WPFW can provide, with an emphasis on social justice. And that's what we're trying to do, especially on the issue of sports and politics. So I want folks to really listen closely how you can give to WPFW. And I'm going to repeat this super slow. Please donate now at WPFWFM.org. Call the pledge line, which is 202-588-9739. Send the Cash App to $WPFWFM. And now you can donate by text. Oh my goodness. Text WPFWFM to 801-801. That's text, just the letters, WPFWFM to 801-801. Gave it out slowly. Hope y'all are listening. Hope you can support WPFW. Easiest way, as always, of course, is just going to go to 202-588-9739. What a year 2024 has been at the intersection of sports and politics. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. It's been an incredible year indeed.
It has been a wild year, and I wanted to talk to you about it because, to me, there are three stories that define what the heck we've just been through in 2024 at the intersection of sports and politics. They are three stories on my brain that define the year, but maybe you have stories on your brain that define your year too, Chuck. So I thought maybe we could divide this up just by going back and forth. I'll say something, please, by all means, give your response. Frankly, if you think it rises to the level of being a top sports story of 2024, I beg of you, do not hesitate to say, Dave Z, you don't know what you're talking about. That's just not a big sports story. Or that's not what we should be talking about. That's not really the point. That, I mean, whatever you want to say. Basically,
yeah,
anything,
I don't have that problem,
as long as you
DJ.
Don't talk disparagingly about my family.
I have no problem critiquing you. And when you give me an opportunity, I actually get a smile on my face. So we're good.
Excellent. We're good to go. So for me, I'll just start with this, Chuck. And I'm not doing this in any order, like 10 to 1, 1 to 10. I frankly ordered what I wanted to say in my mind to you, Chuck, more on the basis of radio flow. So let's start going with what to me is one of the three big sports stories of 2024. And that is the phenomenon of women's basketball extending from the March Madness of the women's game, which got higher ratings than the men, to the WNBA, which was selling out arenas in some cities, particularly when some of the big stars came to town. And the question, of course, this year of Caitlin Clark. And the Iowa basketball star went on to become the Rookie of the Year with the Indiana Fever, leading the WNBA in assists, but let's also be straight, also leading in turnovers. But Caitlin Clark playing like the people that who her biggest fans, and we'll speak about her biggest fans, but certainly playing like her biggest fans said she'd play after she got that nice Olympic break and got to rest. Because, you know, all those women's players have from college having to go straight from the college tournament directly into the WNBA. I mean, that's about as brutal as a transition as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
But with Caitlin Clark as being one of the biggest stories, with the WNBA being one of the biggest stories, with people like Angel Reese and Asia Wilson becoming some of the biggest stories, I just wanted to reflect on that. And I certainly have my thoughts about it, particularly Caitlin Clark's fan base and particularly the way they turned on her ferociously with a recent interview she gave to Time magazine, speaking about her privilege. But I think no matter what one's opinions are of Caitlin Clark and of the rise of women's basketball, I think it stands almost astride the year in terms of being one of the biggest sports stories to come down the pike. Chuck, your thoughts?
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's actually the biggest sports story of the year. There's no question about it, because it reverberates so far beyond sports. Caitlin Clark is a phenomena. We have to analyze that phenomena. We could analyze her game, and we spent a lot of time doing that. But we have to analyze the relationship between Caitlin Clark and her fan base, and a large part of her absolutely toxic, bigoted fan base. And as we've said, we have to dissect who's following Caitlin Clark for her greatness and who's following Caitlin Clark for her whiteness. And we have to analyze that second part. And then their gender dynamics, because she brought in, I would call the out crowd. She brought in the barstool crowd. She brought in the men, and particularly white men. And when we analyze some of the worst critics, they're coming from men, particularly white men, who have never watched WNBA basketball in their life, and bringing in their toxic opinions into the chat and feeling like you should be blessed that we have blessed you with our presence, and take whatever bigotry comes with that. So, yeah, we need to keep talking about it, because it's going to continue.
It is going to continue, and the phenomenon is going to continue, and the growth is going to continue if we can base anything on some of these network contracts that WNBA is getting. And we have to take a step back, Chuck, a league, that not that many years ago, and when I say not that many years ago, I think I mean like two, people were saying this is, I mean, a lot of people on the right, let's be honest, were saying this is not a viable financial operation. This is wokeism run amok by the NBA for subsidizing a women's league so they look like they care about issues. You know, and we all know the kinds of people who said this. The kinds of people who said this are the same people who became born-again WNBA fans with the emergence of Caitlin Clark. And so all of a sudden they flipped from being like, this league is trash, which was always, I think, rooted in not just racism, but a lot of homophobia. And then they get Caitlin Clark, and they feel like they have their avatar of whiteness, of straightness, of all of that. And then Caitlin Clark does an interview at the end of the year for Time Magazine. Yeah. Maybe you could speak a little bit about that, Chuck, and how that changes the sauce, and does it change your thinking on this in any way? And I'll say the same.
Well, she did an extensive interview, and it was her best remarks to date on speaking about her privilege. Maybe their only in-depth remarks in an interview this off-season that was thoughtful. And what was interesting was some of the reaction online to some of her big supporters. And some of her big supporters took exception to that interview. And some were saying, I'm not going to watch the WNBA anymore. Oh, now you're woke, or you bent the knee, and you're seeing this type of reaction. And I would say to those people, good riddance. You know, goodbye. You know, I'd like to continue to hear more from Caitlin Clark, but there's a portion who said that goodbye, go away. We don't need you. There are many who came for the great basketball. There are many who are staying for the great basketball. But if you only came to cheer for the white representation of Caitlin Clark and are attracted to this notion that this white person could dominate an all-black league similar to the appeal of Larry Bird, you can go away, and we'll keep the fans that may be coming that she's bringing for the positive reasons. Go. Bye. We don't need you, because there is harm at the end of what you're doing. There is harm to black women players in the WNBA. There is harm when Angel Reese is getting death threats. There's all kinds of harm, and that is part of the deal. And the WNBA black players should not have to deal with that. And then by extension, everybody else who's associated, like many of the writers and media who've been following the WNBA, are getting this toxic commentary to themselves, whether on Twitter and elsewhere. They don't need it. So you don't have to have a package deal just because you bring in more money.
Man, let me tell you something, Chuck. You just said that so well. I really do believe that. And I love the, by the way, I love the species of person who showed up for Caitlin Clark and then were like, oh, this is actually fun and good basketball. And
yeah,
it's not just shooting three pointers all the time, because there are some, I think, very real complaints going around the sports ecosystem right now of how the WNBA, I mean, I'm sorry, how the NBA is playing.
Yeah.
And the style of the WNBA feels very different than
better.
The NBA. More passing,
it's
less
better.
Threes, more teamwork, more motion. It's yes. in a lot of, you know, John Wooden said this at the end of his life, that he thought the WNBA was a superior product to the NBA.
Who said that?
And
John Wooden?
He said that's the way he felt like it was trending. And, you know, John
He's
Wooden,
right.
I think, was really on to something.
He's absolutely right.
Sorry, go ahead, sir.
Well, I want to honor John Wooden's point. He's absolutely right. And there was a time, from an aesthetic point of view, that WNBA was less appealing aesthetically, because a lot of it having to do with the dunk, right? You're not going to see dunking and flying alley-oops. And I will honor, there's something about the dunk. But what has happened over the years is are really two things, and they're both race-related in a way, particularly post Ron Artest, is the league has become so there was a racist reaction to police black players that every little foul is a foul. You can't do anything without being a foul. So the WNBA, which is ironic, is more physical than the NBA, which a lot of the fans who coming over didn't realize. So you see that. You also see better passing. You see better fundamentals. And now what we're doing is the NBA is finally being critiqued of something that we've been talking about for years, the jacking up of threes, because the Boston Celtics are about to shatter the record. They take about 50 threes a game, and you have these cookie-cutter offenses, and it's becoming, in my opinion, somewhat unwatchable, because it's like you almost have no choice. There's not much of a mid-range game. There's not much of a post game. So aesthetically, you're seeing all of those things in the WNBA. You're seeing hard fouls in the WNBA, and those are all superior. And in my view, the game itself, that has made up for maybe missing on the dunks, which carried the NBA, because the NBA, if they don't, in my opinion, move back that three-point line at some point, and Adam Silver's not that warm to it, but he's made some comments, then I think the NBA has a long-term problem on its product. And the WNBA is, and I believe, a better product.
And I'll end with this so we don't, because we have so much we want to discuss.
Yeah.
But to me, the WNBA is such a microcosm of what happened in politics in 2024. And frankly, not just 2024, but a look at what politics are in our society these days and how toxic they are. Because this is the way I see it, Chuck. You had the WNBA find a mass audience. You had it positively affect the lives of millions of kids. And notice I didn't just say girls, millions
right.
of kids, because these boys that I coach, you know, they are looking at hoops in a more gender neutral way. And it's kind of beautiful, you know, like respect.
Yes.
And they talk about their favorite players and whatnot, you know, and believe me, it ain't just Caitlin Clark, not the kids I'm coaching.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that they identify with great women athletes because they're athletes. Even though they're boys, with all the stuff that boys are raised with in our society, that's a beautiful thing. But Chuck, and this is where the microcosm comes in, the Aaliyah Boston story, the Asia Wilson story, the number of players who had to cancel their social media this
yeah.
year, Angel Reese in tears. I mean, Caitlin Clark with the weight of feeling actually responsible, which I think she has felt, which is, I think, both unfair to her and also speaks to the obligation that she has as a white star, you
yeah.
know, of all this toxicity coming into the league. And this is just a minority of people. These are not that many people, but they've ruined it for these young women athletes who should be having the time of their lives.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? That's
I
what bothers
see.
Me so much about this. Like, if we were doing a movie about the WNBA in 2024, right now should be the scene where they're like living it up and feeling great. Like, this should be the upward arc. The league's doing great. You know, that's what we should be talking about. But instead, if we were doing a movie, it would be like the league's doing great. And now we've also opened the doors to people who are making our lives hell. And that's makes this
right.
a microcosm to me.
You're absolutely right. And basically they've brought in maybe the toxic, nature of what we deal in other sports, and they brought it to the WNBA, which has in many ways been insulated. Because if you were to watch a WNBA broadcast, which is usually black women who are delivering it, it might be right, and Rebecca Lobo or whatever, it's a very different broadcast than the men talking about the WNBA, and much superior, in my opinion. They're talking about the game. They're talking about the highlights and whether a team needs to make adjustments at halftime. They're talking about the players who have been contributing. You're literally watching analysis on the level of maybe Hubie Brown and Doris Burke in the NBA. But when you watch the men and the NBA, what you hear is this player is not getting it done. You're just hearing talk and just nonsense, no analysis. And apparently, you know, when you test these things out on ESPN, the latter, the bluster, the non-analysis gets higher ratings. So what is going to happen as WNBA rises, as they get higher ratings, there's going to be pressure from executives, and we already see it, to talk like the way the men do. Talk like the Skip Baylesses, talk like the Stephen A's, talk in this way to be a hater instead of analysis. And I'm concerned that it is going to go that way to follow the dollars led by executives telling them that.
Very well said, and I think that's right on. Well, so that's the WNBA is a key part of 2024, a microcosm for so much. So I just want to remind everybody that Chuck and I are really assessing this and having the mindset to talk about this because we're supporting WPFW as programmers, as hosts, as people who care about this station, as people who care about the intersection of sports and politics. And I'll tell y'all right now, without WPFW, there's no platform for this kind of coverage, period. So if you support this kind of coverage, if you like what we're saying, if you think we do good radio, if you're one of those people who, when you see me at events, goes, "The Collision," and for all of y'all, I love y'all, please donate right now. WPFWFM.org. Call the pledge line, 202-588-9739. Send a Cash App to $WPFWFM. And now you can donate by text. It's called technology, people, and I'm all about it, even though I sometimes have issues turning on my phone and it's off. You can donate by text. Text WPFWFM to 801-801. I'm going to say that again so it's nice and slow. Donate by text. Text WPFWFM to 801-801. Call 202-588-9739. Chuck, I've got so many more sports stories from 2024, but I'm going to throw it to you. What's a story that's going to stick with you that came out of this last year at that lovely intersection, no matter how tangential, between sports and politics?
You know, there are many, and this is probably not cracking people's top five and top ten, but it's cracking. It's in my brain because of this week, and it's somewhat an extension of a little bit of some of our discussion. In this moment, recency bias, I want to talk about this MVP debate that is heating up between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. And the reason I want to talk about
two quarterbacks in the National Football League.
I am gonna honor the intelligence of our crowd, DZ, to think that they know about these two quarterbacks. If I'm wrong, then okay, listen, it's not good form to chastise your crowd. But you're right, two quarterbacks in the NFL. And what's very interesting,
don't be like the Democratic Party, Chuck, where they're like right now, gosh, we really need to get new voters.
During pledge week, I'm chastising the crowds and not know every name that we say. So my apologies there. That's a good one. Yeah, not good
Thank
form.
You.
You're going to chew me out after.
No,
you know,
I'm not.
Call.
I think it's awesome. Keep going, buddy.
Okay. So the reason I think it's important, Lamar Jackson has won two MVPs, and something happened this past week. Well, first of all, Josh Allen is having a phenomenal year, certainly MVP worthy. And the last 2 weeks in particular, he's had phenomenal weeks. You know, you could argue maybe the best back-to-back week statistically we may have ever seen. So people are on a little bit of a high to see what Josh Allen has done, like 10 rushing touchdowns and 10 passing touchdowns. Yes, Detroit's defense was depleted with injuries and had third stringers. Nevertheless, it was incredible. And what happened on Monday and Tuesday talk show is announcer after announcer, like three at ESPN, Dan Orlovsky, basically it's over. And he puts that Vince Carter picture, it's over at the slam dunk contest, slash in his throat. And all of these other announcers were saying, it's done. It's not even a debate. He wins the MVP. And if they just said, hey, I think Josh Allen should win, he's leading in my vote, I don't think it's a story. I think what was happening, they all pronounced him, with three games left, the winner. It's a wrap. And someone said, I'm trying to remember the announcer, if it's not, Emmanuel Acko, if it's not a unanimous decision in favor of Josh Allen, then it's a problem. Or someone else, you don't know anything about football. I know a little something about football. And I was taken aback that there was this mass, big media coming together to say, Josh Allen is our guy. Why are you doing that? Because I know football. And what I know is right now, Lamar Jackson, 120.7 passer rating. If the season ended today, is the fourth best in NFL history. Now, mind you, that is not if he even gains one single yard, the dual threat. Not bad for a running back, as he might say. The fourth best in history, and Aaron Rodgers, who's ahead of him, and Peyton Manning's ahead of him, only two or three seasons taken them, they won the MVPs that year. So just on his passing alone, without his 741 rushing yards, that's where he stands historically. And you're telling me it's a wrap when he's doing that? He's having his best season. You're telling me it's a wrap? He has a few losses. If Justin Tucker kicks a field goal, he could have, three, four less losses. And I don't see how you can dismiss that publicly and so many people at the same time. Why are you lobbying for Josh Allen in this way? Not the usual, it's close, it's a wrap. So I have a huge, huge problem with that. And it's a problem with sports media. Are they doing it for clicks? Or have they gotten together to say, hey, we need to push the white guy this time because too many black people are winning these MVPs? I don't know what it is, but it's bothering me a lot this week. Do you have any thoughts, sir?
I certainly do. I mean, one of the things that bothers me a great, great deal as we debate Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens versus Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. See what I did there?
Was that for the audience? Was that for the audience? I got you. You're always educated on it. You never know when we have a listener for the first time. So thank you, DZ.
Yep. Both quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, of course, is a man of the descent of being a black American in the United States. Josh Allen is of the descent of being a white American in the United States. Just wanted to explain that as well.
That's right.
The root of Chuck's analysis, which, by the way, I agree with. Here's the stat that really bothers me, Chuck, a lot, is everybody who's in the Josh Allen camp, and believe me, there are those people in my life, say, okay, he may have had some stinker games. He may have a passer rating 20 points lower than Lamar. But, and they make two arguments, Chuck, one which is absurd, one which has legitimacy. The absurd argument is Josh Allen has so many more rushing touchdowns than Lamar. I hate that argument because when the Bills are on the one-yard line, they give it to Josh Allen, who's the biggest offensive player they have. He literally is, other than the tight end. He's the offensive lineman, of course. He's the biggest player that they have. Lamar Jackson is like not the biggest player. The Ravens have. Yeah. They have a guy by the name of Derrick Henry, who is frankly so big he could be wrestling in WWE as easily as he could be running the ball for the Ravens. When they're on the 1 yard line, they give the ball to Derrick Henry. So Josh Allen has a lot of statistic inflation just by the role that they have him play in the offense versus Lamar. So I hate that argument. The argument that I think has legs. Let's face it, the Bills are running away with the AFC East. If Lamar, I think, is going to have to win out the rest of the year and win his division to have a shot, because you mentioned Rodgers and Peyton. Yeah, they had the ratings. They also won their divisions with impressive records when they won those MVPs. And I also think that voters have, and this is a real thing among voters, I wish it wasn't because it's so squirrely and I don't believe in the words I'm about to say, but they get what's called voter fatigue, where they're just like, ah, Lamar's got two MVPs, Josh has zero, Josh Allen is a very important player in this era, let's give him an MVP. That will play a role in the final voting, Chuck, and I really wish it did not. So if Lamar wins out, I don't even want to hear it. Josh Allen should just applaud and say, go Lamar. But the idea that even Steven Josh should win it, I think is absurd.
Okay, I've listened to your argument, and now my response is actually going to help Josh Allen because I the second point has, I disagree with you, DZ. You've been wanting me to disagree with you. I agree with you that, you know, record makes a difference. Though, if you look at the games that the Ravens lost, if Justin Tucker was Justin Tucker, you know, they were winning at least three of those games, maybe four. I mean, they lost them in a minuscule way, missing easy field goals. And this is the great Justin Tucker. So I even think that that is a little soft. But I disagree with you on the one-yard touchdown. And here's why, okay? So, first of all, they make this critique against Jalen Hurts on the tush-push, and I defend Jalen Hurts. You don't see other quarterbacks doing that, risking injury on every play. And then I defend that on Cam Newton. They used to say that, Cam Newton. And the truth is Cam Newton had such a high rate on the level of Derrick Henry that he would get these one-yard touchdowns that it made no sense on a third and one. I believe Cam Newton had one of the greatest third and short. So if Josh Allen is big and if Josh Allen is a higher percentage chance to get that one-yard touchdown, then they're giving it to him, and he is risking injury. Not maybe the same way that Jalen is because his body's being contorted in all these types of ways and the tush-push. And if you're risking injury and if you're getting beat up and you're the best one-yard rusher, then I think you get credit for that. And let me add this, you know, because people were like, you know, Cam's, they didn't count. Tom Brady has over 100 touchdowns in his career from the 1 and 2 yard line. 1 and 2 yard line. Has anyone ever made the case, hey, you know, really we need to, they're not the real touchdowns. They could have just handed it off. They were stealing touchdowns from a running back. No one's ever said that. But when a running quarterback gets that, we have that argument. I'm going to give Josh Allen credit on that score, hurting my own argument and having the opportunity to disagree with you, DZ. So how about that?
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with you more, of course. And I'll tell you, someone else I do not like is my argument for your incorrect argument. And that person I do not like is a certain quarterback for Kansas City by the name of Patrick. Don't call me Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
I'll call him Pat Mahomes out of respect for his father, a very, very, you know, middling Major League Baseball pitcher named Pat Mahomes. But
that's right.
Let me tell you about Pat Mahomes, who I won't dignify by calling Patrick because I feel like it's an affectation. Let me tell you, Pat Mahomes used to be the master of the one-yard sneak early in his career. He got hurt doing it once. And Andy, the criticism that Andy Reid got for putting this once-in-a-generation player at risk for something like a one-yard run was when that happened, I remember being like, I hope Lamar never does a one-yard run again. Totally not worth it, risk and reward. Now,
agreed.
The reason why, one of the reasons why Reed got so much criticism is at the time their number one running back was a guy named Kareem Rush who could bull his way to 1 yard in no uniform because of his
and
running
jump
style.
Over a pile, too, and jump over a pile.
Yes, or jump over the pile. Derrick Henry, similar.
Exactly.
The Bills never have had that running back in the Allen tenure. And Cam Newton, I don't know, man. I guess he had Jonathan Stewart, who is a very good between the tackles runner. But Jonathan Stewart was no Cam Newton between the tackles. And so I just feel like as a coach, you go with two sets of percentages where your quarterbacks sneak. Injuries and success rate. And Allen is given this task because of his size and because at least by this time he kind of appears injury free. Although I think we both remember when they said that about Cam Newton too, you know, it doesn't matter how big you are. You take enough hits, you're going to feel it, especially as a QB. So I don't know, man. Like, I can't agree with that. I think Josh Allen gets a lot of gimme touchdowns. And it would be one thing if Lamar kept getting stuffed on those same plays, but they don't run him. But I just don't like that as a marker,
as
because it's not a one-to-one marker, since Lamar never does that.
Okay, I mean, first of all, that's a pretty good argument. I agree with you in the sense that coaches shouldn't be, you know, putting their players at risk. We all saw Mike Shanahan ruin RG3's career when he's on one bad leg and he throws him out there to the Wolves. To this day, I believe RG3 would have been a Hall of Famer when it was with that speed. And I sometimes get mad when I see, particularly Jalen Hurts, because he's slight. He's not like Cam and Josh. He's not a big 6'6 dude. He's slight. And when I see those tush pushes and he's being contorted, and I'm like, wow, he's putting his career on the line. And by the way, Jalen Hurts leads the league in rushing touchdowns. That includes running backs, so like a 15 or something like that. 16, I'm not sure what it is. I think one more than Josh Allen. He deserves incredible credit, even though I wish he would do it less. And then Saquon is not a good short yardage, you know, running back. And I see the difference there. Most, I think he's averaged 6 Saquon the last few years. So there is that. But if you have a Derrick Henry, right? If you have a Derrick Henry, yeah, it makes no sense to Lamar. I think what I'm saying, once you go down that, oh, he's getting these 1 yard touchdowns. Now we're messing with the legitimacy of touchdowns. And what I am arguing,
okay, that's a good point.
Yeah, and what I'm arguing is on this day, even with those touchdowns that I do honor, Lamar Jackson statistically having a better year in every category except the win column. So we, you and I, and reasonable people, can have a Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson debate. But don't tell me it's not a debate. Don't tell me Josh Allen has it wrapped up, because then you have another agenda, or you don't know what Lamar Jackson is doing this year. It is an absolute debate. And if you're not willing to have it and you're saying it's over, you are committing journalistic and statistical malpractice.
Wow. Do you know Lamar Jackson now leads by a decent amount? Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, and Aaron Rodgers, I believe, are tied for second. And I think Brady is also in there, like a four-way tie for second, with Lamar several points ahead of them, several rungs ahead of them in this statistic. Most touchdowns passes, more touchdown passes in a game than incompletions. This past week, he had 5 TDs, only 4 incompletions. He's done it like 6 times in his career. I mean, this guy is, I mean, when people are like, I hate it when people are like, do you know he actually can pass from the pocket? It's like, where you been, buddy?
Where have you been
happening?
It's been happening. And so the people are showing their implicit bias, racism, all of those people early on. Wait till they figure out Lamar Jackson. They only say figure out for the black quarterback, because, you know, all defenses are going to adjust against the quarterback. But what you're saying is that he doesn't have the intellect to readjust to the adjustment. So there's a lot of racial bias that people are putting out there that they're not aware of. And let's be clear here. This is not just the usual Twitter bigots who believe every black quarterback can't, quote unquote, can't read defenses. That's what we hear. That's the code. This is Bill Polian, who said, Bill Polian, the famed Hall of Famer, GM, 6-time executive of the year, who after Lamar won the Heisman wanted to move him to wide receiver, said he should be a wide receiver, said he is too short at 6'2". His words, not mine, too short. You know, Baker Mayfield shorter than him. And he advocated for Johnny Manziel, who's shorter than him. This is the brain trust of basically the NFL through the 70s, through the 2010. And if you want to see why all the previous Lamar Jacksons who could be in the Hall of Fame as QB were shifted to wide receiver, look no further than that level of racism at the highest GM level who didn't give Lamar a shot. So Lamar is doing this for all of the quarterbacks who had their shot denied, and opening doors along with Jalen Hurts for all black dual threat quarterbacks in the future. So this is a much bigger story than simply who was your favorite quarterback.
In a recent book by Professor Lou Moore called The Great Black Hope, specifically focusing in on two trailblazing black quarterbacks, Vince Evans and, of course, DC's own legend, Doug Williams, and uses those two stories, particularly Vince Evans, whose story is fascinating. I remember him in the 80s as a backup quarterback. Probably he was the first mediocre black quarterback. Or I should say good to mediocre black, because obviously for decades, and frankly until recently, if you couldn't really ball as a black quarterback, you weren't even getting a chance. And Vince Evans was really the first, and then frankly last for quite a few years, of black quarterbacks who weren't necessarily superstars. Doug Williams, of course, was a superstar who just didn't get the chance. But Vince Evans did not nearly have Doug Williams' physical skills. So it's a fascinating journey that Doug Williams had, and Lou Moore just nails the book. It's called The Great Black Hope for folks out there who are interested. Also, I got to give a shout out. Yo, we're only $35 to go for our pledge. Oh, shout out to Alen for really coming through. And also, shout outs... going back a bit, but I want to, like, Anonymous from D.C., Grace from Annapolis, Ture Ann from D.C., James Weeks from Chevy Chase. Thank you all for giving to WPFW. Thank you, Alen, for giving to The Collision. Folks, keep it up. This is the stretch run. The stretch run. We got just a little more to go. Just call 202-588-9739. Cash App to $WPFWFM. And now you can donate by text. This is not a drill. Text WPFWFM to 801-801. That's WPFWFM to 801-801. We got $35 to go. I'm in my Amy Goodman voice. $35. Also, just to give people some serious juice in terms of what makes WPFW so important, we are doing a series of specials today from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. about two of the greatest poets to ever live, two poets who had a great personal influence on me, the recently departed Nikki Giovanni and the great Amira Baraka. Amira Baraka, Nikki Giovanni, I had the good fortune in different events to share a stage with each of them. And the one thing I'll say about Nikki Giovanni is, Chuck, it was a big event. She was bored at it. It was like a series of speakers on their books. It was like six of us. She ended up in the corner with me as people approached tentatively to get her to sign their books and just talk football with me for several hours. Nikki Giovanni. Huge football fan. Huge college football fan.
Well, hold on. You need to. You're talking with Nikki Giovanni on sports, a huge football fan. You need to do some elaborating, sir.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad you said that.
What were you talking about?
Nikki Giovanni, the great revolutionary poet who wrote about political revolution, but certainly could write a poem about a piece of fruit that would put tears in your eyes, let alone love and attraction and all sorts of issues, nature, friendship. I mean, an incredible range of humanity in Nikki Giovanni. And people may know or may not know, Chuck, I don't know if you know this, but her home for quite some time has been Blacksburg, Virginia, where she taught at Virginia Tech.
That I know. I remember the shootings, yeah.
Yeah, and remember her poem after the shootings. Yeah. It was so incredible. Nikki Giovanni also was the teacher there of poetry and hip hop, which was an incredibly popular class at VaTech.
Poetry and hip hop.
And a student who loved that class was named Michael Vick.
And No. This is people should be tuning in to WPFW. They're not dropping these nuggets elsewhere.
No. No, and let me tell you something. NFL Sunday, the pregame shows did not say we have to talk to Michael Vick about his relationship with Nikki Giovanni after she passed, although that would be one heck. Can you imagine one of those meet Jay Glazer? So, Michael Vick, one of the greatest running quarterbacks ever. So what was your relationship with the revolutionary black poet, Nikki Giovanni? You know what I'm saying? It's like they wouldn't even know the language.
That's right.
Of how to speak about it. I mean,
yeah,
I can't imagine what he would say. He would be like, Nikki Giovanni, is she related to Gino Robustelli, the Hall of Famer? And Michael Vick would be like, no. And Jay Glazer would be like, you mean they aren't both Italian? And it's like, no.
Was she a Commanders fan?
No, strictly in the college game. A laser gotcha. Focus on the college game through Vivatech. Okay. But because okay. she's Nikki Giovanni, she wasn't just like, oh yeah, Michael Vick was a great student, and then she started just listing off all the Vatech players to be in the class. But she got into, you know, because they would write poems about it sometimes, she got into the more thinking, artistic side of the game. I mean, she knew the sport. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, I mean, that's the thing. It's Nikki Giovanni's brain we're talking about. I mean, football was not a challenge for her to understand, even though sometimes these NFL coaches act like they're, you know, splitting the atom when they talk about how to set up a running play. Some of that is ego, to put it mildly. Some of that is for real. It's just an incredibly complicated sport. But Nikki Giovanni was on it. I think folks should absolutely listen to WPFW today from 11 to 7 because it's not just Nikki Giovanni. We're talking about Amiri Baraka. Oh, my goodness. That's the legend of Amiri Baraka. The one Amiri Baraka story I'm going to tell, Chuck, and then we can move on and talk about what we learned this past year was, and this relates to our co-host, Etan Thomas. Etan gets in touch with me, and believe me, obviously, this was some time ago because Amiri Baraka passed. Transitioned some time ago, but Etan calls me up and says, hey, I'm not joking around when I say this, Chuck, we're doing an outdoor poetry reading at a mall in Prince George's County for a ton of students. And I was like, oh, and Etan says to me, Amiri Baraka is going to be one of the poets. And I was like, oh, and then Etan says to me, and we need someone to MC it.
Oh,
and you do it, Dave.
Wow. You're like, I don't know. You know what? My calendar's a little stuffed that day. I got to rearrange my sock drawer.
Well, I would have had to be in an oxygen tent to not do this. So,
of course.
Went out to the mall, and it was I'll tell you this. It was like a couple of hundred 11 to 13-year-old kids with teachers looking at them like they were wardens. To make sure these kids, because they think about this, they're kids. It's the middle of the school day. It's outdoors. It's in the middle of a mall. You know, these kids were like, the level of distraction and sensory overload was through the roof. And a couple hundred of them outnumbering their teachers, right? And I got up there to MC and, you know, it was, you know, it's like they're talking, trying to shush them, all the rest of it. And I'm looking over in the side at Amiri Baraka. Amiri Baraka was not a tall man, not in the slightest. And at the time, he was a very elderly man. And I'm thinking to myself, these kids are going to, they don't know who Amiri Baraka is. They're going to eat him alive. Oh, my goodness. Look at these young people. So I invite them, and because they were, you know, eating me alive and flossing their teeth. So I call Amiri Baraka to come on stage. I'm not joking around, Chuck. He had these young people in the palm of his hand.
Wow.
How he spoke. He was one of those guys who the speaking style was he used movement. He used his arms. I mean, the only person I could think of, Chuck, to compare him to in my life that I have seen in person, this is going to be a little surprising because I saw this person on stage. And I was in like the 10th row. Al Pacino was the only person I would compare Amiri Baraka to.
Wow.
Because Al Pacino is like just a little over 5 feet tall. But when he's on that stage, it's like he fills the room. He's a lion.
Yeah.
And Amiri Baraka was a lion on that stage.
Yeah.
And he had these 11, 12-year-olds in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
Pacino-esque, sir.
Yeah.
Pacino-esque. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. You know, I have a big regret. I went to the school where, for college, that Amiri Baraka was at, and I walked by him a few times, and I heard about, but you have to understand, my level
of consciousness in college was somewhere between drinking a lot of beer and doing other substances. It wasn't really, you know, I'm a late bloomer. And as far as consciousness, and I always regret that if I had known more, I would have, you know, tried to take some of his courses, ask some questions, or use that opportunity, because I would walk by him in the hall many times, but I just was at a different place back then in college, and it wasn't a very conscious place.
Hey, man, I'll tell you my little story, too. Of course, people may know Amiri Baraka's born name was Leroy Jones.
Yeah.
My dad, I'll just tell everybody this, very conservative guy. We don't see eye to eye on politics. And when I did that event with Amiri Baraka, I told him about it. And he said, oh, I invited him to my campus when he was Leroy Jones. I organized the whole event. And I just first of all, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then my dad had this incredible story of, you know, traveling with him to the venue. He wrote a poem, especially for the event, making fun of my dad and all his friends for being at an all boys school. And my dad still remembered every word of that. It was a brief poem making fun of them. It called There Are No Women in Tiger Town. And my dad remembered every word. And it was There Are No Co-eds in Tiger Town. But man, Amiri Baraka, nothing else to say. Okay. So everybody needs to listen to WPFW between the hours of 11 and 7. So you two can figure this out. And whoa, Chuck, we have smashed our goal. Smashed our goal.
Wow.
We are up to 565, dude. I said 400. I said to our fearless leader, Katia Stitt, who's so amazing, before this broadcast, let's raise $500. Katia said, let's keep it four. Hey, Katia, we got five. 565, I love it. If people want to support the show, it's not too late. Click donate now at WPFWFM.org. Call the pledge line, 202-588-9739. Cash App, WPFWFM. You got to put that dollar sign at first. And new, you can donate by text. And I'm going to say this mighty slow. Text to WPFWFM to this number. Just, it's six digits. 801-801. So, Chuck, in the little time we have left, and it's not nearly as much as I want, give me one big sports story from 2024 that put a dang smile on your face.
Put a smile on my face? That's seeing
I'll
those
name
Palestinian.
If you need to think a second, I can put jump in.
No,
I know I'm hitting
you. So seeing those Palestinian flags, and I'm going back here. I'm stealing from the previous year. I don't care. It's seeing those Palestinian flags that were all over the World Cup, that were everywhere, but have continued on to this year at sporting events, usually
the Olympics,
soccer in Europe, the Olympics. Seeing the Palestinian flag as an expression in popular culture, that in media, you're not going to cover this. You're not going to cover these mass protests. We're going to force you to see these flags on the world stage. That always brings a smile on my face wherever it happens.
Man, I'm going to tell you that for me, it's a big deal what I'm about to say to you. It was being in Paris for the Olympics and meeting a man. Ooh. Oh, my God. Such an incredible person. I'll never, ever, ever forget this person. His name was Fadi Diab, and he was a Paralympian from Gaza. And he was the only person at the event from Gaza. And it was really intense to speak to him. He's in a wheelchair. He was shot by the IDF about 20 years ago, and it was spine. But he was a world-class discus thrower, shot putter. He told me about training in Gaza with things like bricks, like whatever they could find, because they didn't have a shot put that day. And yet there he was in Paris. And I said to him, what do you want the world to know? And he said that we are here, we are visible, we are alive, and we want freedom. And I said to him, I was like, wow, I'm so glad you've gotten a chance to get your word out at this thing. And dude said to me that I was the only person to get in touch with him for an interview.
Wow.
And that was painful.
And isn't that a commentary, not just on sports, but the media coverage all across the board? And that's why you were there. You were meant to be there, DZ. You were meant to interview him. You were meant to interview him and tell his story at those Olympics
precisely because others wouldn't. And that's why you and I are here at WPFW, because we can talk about that. We can talk about Nikki Giovanni and Michael Vick in the same space. But those are the stories that people need to hear and are not hearing. But that hurts my heart, what you just said, that all of those reporters didn't think that was a story.
Word. But it's, you know, sometimes truths are tough to hear. But, yo, I want to give one last report, then we'll call it a show. I'm so excited. Okay, we're here on 565. Great show. The thing that I'm happy about this year, Chuck, one other thing. I just want to give a shout out to, and I mean this from the heart, to the Los Angeles Dodgers winning the World Series over the Yankees. I know, Chuck, you're a former Yankees fan. Love seeing Shohei do his thing. Best baseball player, certainly of my lifetime. Sorry, Barry Bonds. But the fact that Shohei can pitch like that is just puts him on a next level, maybe above anybody to ever live. Chuck, any last words? I'm so excited for someone else to win the NBA championship other than the Boston Celtics this year. Yes, I'm trying to speak it into existence. Sorry, go ahead, Chuck.
Go Knicks. Those last were go Knicks, following what you said. We're going to make that happen. So it's going to happen before I die. There you heard it.
Amen. It is. Yo, it's so funny, too, that like their last championship was like right before I was born. I'll just never will I be alive for another one. Yo, everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on The Collision. For everybody out, thanks for supporting not just The Collision, but WPFW. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Straight out of ATL. Got young one chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats, full surface.
Party in the hood, I might just toss. Underground, downtown, I might just toss. Give me the keys to the city, I'ma lock this. They ain't gon' take me alive, and you can bet that. Hit 'em where the chest at, hit 'em where the neck at. Show me where the rest at. They in the same building, living like a mess pack. 4 miles from where the deck at. Get that shout if you and me gon' ride over to the other side. It's how these motherfuckers die. First make a prank call and get the kids out the house. Ain't tryna kill no kid, but I'ma turn it lights out.
During our upcoming end-of-year pledge drive, WPFW offers the gift of knowledge as we dedicate the week to icons of culture and resistance, Bill Lucy, Quincy Jones, Nikki Giovanni, and Amiri Baraka. On Monday, December 16th, 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., we unpack the legacy of Bill Lucy and center the Black Workers' Movement. Wednesday, December 18th, it's From the Pen of Q, a Quincy Jones retrospective, 5 a.m. until 8 p.m. We close with Truth is on the Way, a tribute to new ancestor Nikki Giovanni and Amiri Baraka at 90. On Thursday, December 19th, 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. Detailed schedule at WPFWFM.org. You can give the gift of knowledge anytime by texting WPFWFM to 801-801, helping us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This Saturday, December 21, Mendoza Hoff Revels, a jazz punk quartet hailing from New York City, will make their DC debut at the Black Cat on 14th Street Northwest in a concert presented by Capital Bop. Details can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. If you're already a cherished member of the WPFW Jazz and Justice Circle and your contributions this year have not reached $1,000, your membership will expire on New Year's Eve. To renew your membership, or become a new member of the Jazz and Justice Circle through the end of 25. Donations can be made during our year-end fund drive from December 15th through the 21st. Anytime before December 31st, Jazz and Justice Circle donations can be made several ways. By calling 202-588-9739 during the pledge drive. By visiting WPFW.